Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New York Markets Live. I am Miguel Perez Santala, a 30-year veteran of the New York commodities and financial markets and vice president at BullionVault.com, the world's largest online exchange for gold and silver bullion. This show is a series of educational programs sponsored by BullionVault, where we will be bringing you experts from different areas of the commodities and financial markets to broaden your understanding of how the markets work and the different products available to you. We believe you will enjoy the show and look forward to bringing you hours of enjoyable programming. Thank you for tuning in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to New York Markets Live, a production of BullionVault.com, the world's largest online gold and silver exchange for the private investor. You are listening to the second entry in our educational program series, in which we will be covering a very interesting topic directly related to the gold and silver markets and that of other commodities, which is the mining sector. I'm sorry, we had a technical difficulty there. Our guest, Mickey Fulp, is a certified professional geologist and is known as the mercenary geologist, because let's say he is like a gun for hire in the mining industry. He has had over 35 years of experience in the business as an analyst, geologist, and in business development in the mining sector. He has worked across the spectrum of mining companies from large to small. He is well known for speaking and has done so at events such as Resource Investor Forum, the Cambridge House Conference, Mines and Money in Hong Kong, Asia Mining Conference, and PDAC in Toronto. I also had first met him at the Hard Asset Investment Conference in San Francisco. He is also frequently interviewed and has appeared on the Financial Survival Network, Kitco News, Boulder on Business, The Daily Gold, and MineWeb. Mickey is well known and highly respected for his expertise in the mining community and as a person of great character. While browsing on his website, I was looking at some pictures he has at the different mine sites. It brought to mind the several adventures that I myself have had visiting the mining industry in Colombia, Mexico, and Brazil. But one specific picture, though, had me intrigued. There is one where Mickey is holding a pair of rather large frogs in La Jolla, New Mexico. I don't know if he was planning to keep them as pets or eat them for dinner. Now is our chance to find out. Let's welcome Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist, to New York Markets Live. Hi, Mickey, and welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Well, so what's the story with those frogs?
I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you.
The frogs, yeah. Well, that's one of my hobbies, and that's hunting frogs, and I'm a great fondness for frog legs, so that's what that's all about.
Oh, so you did eat them for dinner. That's what I was wondering. They looked appetizing, I'll be honest with you. I'm like, oh, myself, I like frog legs too. I've had them before. I've never hunted them, but I have had them.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a survivalist and a hunter and fisherman and gatherer, so that's just part of the program here in South Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I'm sure it's exciting. I'm sure that if anything ever happened where I need that kind of help, you're the man I'm going to call.
Yeah, hey, listen, you and a bunch of other people.
I'm sure. So tell us about your company and what it is exactly you do.
Well, my basis is I'm an economic geologist, and I would emphasize the word economic in that. So lots of years of experience in the field, from basic reconnaissance exploration to mine development, specifically in metals and with a focus on gold and copper. But for the last 6 years, I've kind of reinvented myself as a mining analyst and a speaker and writer, and So my goal here is to educate retail lay investors and bring some insight into what can and will make a profitable mine and reward shareholders.
Well, that's a great thing to do, obviously, and hopefully you'll be very successful at it, and I'm sure that people appreciate that. You know, one of the questions I have is if you could address for the listener, what's the difference between junior exploration companies, junior, mid-tier, and major mining companies?
Well, people generally refer to our sector and the companies within it as mining companies, but very few of these companies, and I deal with the smaller companies, what I would call the junior resource sector, and those companies are mainly listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange or the Toronto Venture Exchange, and most of those are speculative exploration companies, but that's where the real profits can be made in the stock market. So they have no cash flow, they have no revenues, and they are basically trying to sell a story of something that can and will make a profitable mine. So that's where I come in. And so they are opposed to the various levels of mining companies that actually do mine a product and attempt to make a profit.
So how does an individual research a company like? How do they know what to invest in?
Well, it can be quite difficult because let's take, for instance, the two Toronto exchanges. There's something on the order of 1,600 companies, and they all have a story that they're trying to get you to speculate in. But you can go back to what I would call the fundamentals of any company, and that would be its share structure. You want a tightly held share structure. You want people that have experience in the sector and have been successful. For instance, I wouldn't call someone that's bankrupted three companies to be either a venture capitalist or an entrepreneur anymore. So, and this is very much a speculative market we deal in. And finally, you want a good project, something that can make a mine. My research always starts with the company website. It goes to stock charts and looking at trading, and so there's a variety of places where you can get this information, and then generally I want to get to know the principals of the company, and that's pretty easy to do because they're small companies, and do a field visit, and that's where I bring my expertise in, is the evaluation of the project from a field geologist perspective.
I'll tell you a really quick story with someone I actually knew in Guadalajara who had invested in a silver mine, and it ended up being a scam. And they were a private investor and got it and bought the mine, and they got scammed. I know they were shown all these reserves, and they sold the sample, and supposedly the sample was set, and it came back, and it was great, and it was wonderful. And then he decided to buy it and mine it, and it ended up not being what it was told. So that's about the proven reserve and the assumed reserves and whether people are salting what's being sent in. Could you explain a little about that for the listener?
Well, yeah, and so there's a couple of questions involved there. First of all, red flags would be a private company that probably already had a mine and a mill perhaps without having explored it and developed resources or reserves. So there are a couple of red flags right there already, in my mind. But let's go to the difference between reserves and resources, and that's commonly of great confusion to the lay investor. In fact, I've written about that, and people can go on my website and pull that article up from the fall of 2008. A geological resource is a mineral inventory of metal in the ground, as opposed to what is called a reserve, which has an economic study. So before something can be a resource, it has to be drilled out and a significant body of geological knowledge developed. Before it can be converted into a reserve, it has to be shown to be economically viable. And so every market will have regulations that that companies, public companies, have to conform to get those categories.
So when, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm a novice at all this stuff. So when they drill into the ground, they do these drillings and they report these things, because I've seen these reports. And then at some point they call them proven reserves. Or is that proven reserves? Is that
well,
they
yeah.
Start
so that's way down the line, Miguel. So so before you would, let's use the Toronto exchange as an example. So they have what is called 43-101 resources and reserves. So the first thing you get is what's called an inferred resource, and that would involve drilling at wide spaces and essentially a mineral inventory, a geological mineral inventory of what may be there. Then as you do additional drilling, those can be converted to indicated resources and measured resources. So you're increasing the confidence of your knowledge and your base right there in a resource. Measured and indicated resources can then, with economic studies, a pre-feasibility study or a full-blown bankable feasibility study, be converted into what is called probable and proven reserves. And at that point, you have an economic study by independent parties that said, this is mineable, and yes, you can make a profit at it.
Oh, okay. Well, are there books that people can refer to for this, or is it your website?
Well, there's some long, kind of long-winded regulations from the SEC in the States and the Canadian Institute of Mining and Metallurgy in Canada and Australia and London. They use something called the Joint Ore Resources Committee regulations, but those are they're pretty dry, but here's what I would suggest. If people want kind of a summary of this with specifics to the Toronto Stock Exchange, go on my website. In the fall of 2008, I wrote a musing, which is what I call my newsletter, Monday Morning Musings from Mickey the Mercenary Geologist, obviously like alliteration. But this one's called Reserves versus Resources, a Primer for the Lay Investor, and it's an attempt to give the retail lay investor kind of an outline and a platform for evaluating projects in the business.
And so how does the – like you said that then they have independent companies that audit these reserves or track them and – how do we know who those companies are?
Yeah, they've got a – sorry to cut you short, but they've got a public exploration or mining company has to hire an independent geological and engineering firm or group of consulting firms to do these studies for them. So these are independent parties that – have no vested interest in the stock or in promulgating something that's a falsity. Now, I must say that for every failed mine, there is a positive feasibility study. So it's not fail-safe, but it's the kind of the best we can do under the circumstances that we're given. And you know, until you actually go in and mine a deposit and recover ore and sell that at a profit, it's you know, there's risk involved. Mining is a very risky investment.
Right, because you really don't know how far down that find is or where it is. In fact, I recently read.
Well, you do within certain confidence levels because you've drilled it. So you've drilled it.
Right.
You've drilled it to the bottom of what you consider economically feasible. But you there are things that are beyond your control: the supply demand fundamentals of the commodity, the prices of the commodities, which go up and down, which affect your profits. You know, if you're not a well-run company, you may be have very high G&A, or you may have something. If you're operating in a third-world country, they may nationalize your business want a bigger piece of the pie, and we find this commonly. So mining's a tough business, but because it's a tough business, because it's a risky business, the risk-reward profile has to be high. Therefore, if you are smart and you do proper due diligence, the profits can be astounding in this business for people that play the stock market.
Right. And, excuse me, what are the, right now, what are the mining companies that you see up and coming at the moment? Maybe, you know, past the exploratory part where they've proven some reserves or whatever, where they have proven reserves?
Well, that's a difficult question right now, and I'm probably going to pass on that exactly.
Okay.
Because the mining business is a bit, and it's very down right now. And a lot of that had to do with the mid-tier and the major. Let's focus on gold, for instance, here right now.
Mm-hmm.
The mid-tiers and the majors over the last 10 years during what started as a gold boom in 2003, when the price really started going up, they've mismanaged. In my opinion, they've mismanaged their companies. They've focused on growth, and I like to refer to this as the Wall Street-style capitalism, which is growth of earnings, growth of production. So they focused on quantity of gold ounces produced versus quality of ounces. In my opinion, mining should be a value industry, not a growth industry. So we are in a period right now where the gold companies are reorganizing. They're writing off their bad assets, their bad acquisitions, and writing off some reserves, because as the price of gold goes down, what were reserves yesterday are likely not reserves today. In other words, they can't, all those ounces can't be mined at a profit today. So until this business kind of gets itself straightened out, and mining companies write off all their bad assets, and they tighten their ships and start producing gold at a profitable cost and of operating costs with proper margins, the business is going to be going to suffer.
Right, and I know that that market, right, the stocks have dropped significantly, but that means that there must be some opportunities too for any that also dropped and were actually being run correctly.
Well, very much so, and you've nailed that on the head. So as, and I'm a contrarian, so as contrarians, our job now is to go find some of these distressed companies and buy them when they're selling for a dime on the dollar. Now, personally, I don't focus on the miners as much as I focus on the advanced explorers, because that's where the great profits can be made because of the speculation that's involved. So right now, there's a number of companies that are selling at very distressed prices, and I'm buying some of those and have been buying them over the last year or so. But as a contrarian, you have to have patience. And so we just go in and pick off some of the bargains and sit on them and wait. And all business cycles, all businesses are cyclical. Mining is a boom and bust business. And so we're in a bust phase right now, and so it presents buying opportunities, in my opinion.
What are the best exchanges for looking at gold mine stocks? I mean, is it, you mentioned the Toronto Exchange. Are there any other exchanges that do a good job of handling these stocks that are listed?
I'll be very blunt here and say, in my opinion, no. The most of the scams in the mining business can be perpetrated most easily through the over-the-counter bulletin board in the United States. So I shy away from those companies. Any stock with a four-letter symbol, meaning an OTCBB company, is a four-letter word, in my opinion. The other exchanges, about 60% of the mining and exploration companies in the world are listed either on the Toronto Big Board or the...
Hello? Nikki? Hang on, let me try and bring him back, folks. Nikki? Hello?
Hello? Yeah.
Mickey. I have no idea what that was. All right, you're there.
Okay, well, I'll pick up again. So
yeah, you were on the Toronto Big Board?
Yeah, so the Toronto Big Board, the Toronto Venture Exchange, would have the most mining companies and raise the most money for financing exploration mining projects. Then we would have the Australian Stock Exchange and the London Exchange, and that would generally be the AIM. But the problem with those latter two, Australia and London, is they end up with very unwieldy and diluted share structures. And so I like very much a tight share structure. And the only place I can find that's on Toronto Stock Exchange.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the Toronto Stock Exchange should surely hire you as their spokesperson.
Well, I don't know if they want to, because that said, you know, I referred to originally there's about somewhat over 1,600 mining and exploration, I should say exploration and mining companies, because mainly they're explorers. But
right.
But I only own about 30 of them. So, and I'm very particular in what I buy, and I'll reject someone on the order of 98 out of 100 companies. So,
wow.
So do the math there. I own 30 and there's 1,600. So it's about 2% to attract my speculative dollars.
You know, I remember in the 90s, I remember it was the front page of the Wall Street Journal, some big mining stock that was in Thailand. I don't know what happened. The guy, it was like this huge thing, and then the guy jumped out of a helicopter to his death or something like that. I mean, this is in the back of my memory, but I think they made a movie about it. Am I right?
Well, yeah, I think there is a movie. There's a couple of books. That was called The Briex Scandal, and it took a company that boasted 100 million ounces of gold, and it had 0 ounces of gold, and it really destroyed what was then the Vancouver Stock Exchange for a period of about 5 years. That morphed into the Toronto Venture Exchange. They merged Montreal, Alberta, and the Vancouver exchanges, and put them all in Toronto, and developed these regulations that we just referred to, 43-101 on resources and reserves, and they made the business transparent. The business used to be very opaque, and so, you know, all markets are populated by, in my opinion, shysters, snakes, sharks, and charlatans. I mean, go to the New York Stock Exchange, you see people like that. You know, except there they call them the bankers, or banksters, as I call them, and they become
right.
Part of entities that are too big to fail. But, you know, markets are driven, especially retail markets, driven by people by greed, fear, and panic. So, and you add in the fact that humans, by their nature, look at that yellow metal and they get gold fever. So by that token, our business is ripe for scammers and fraudsters, but who are just really there to mine the stock market. But with proper due diligence, I'll come back to the fact that we can make enormous profits in a market like this.
Right, if you're doing the right things.
Yeah,
doing
the right things, you can't buy a stock that your brother-in-law or your best friend says, hey, this is the hottest gold mine in the southern hemisphere. You're going to get burned. So, you know, people are basically lazy, and you've got to get off your duff and go in and do very hard research and pick a couple of newsletter writers who you know and trust. And you do that, and you can avoid this. For the most part, you can avoid the scams. And then you got to buy when these stocks are down. Any stock on the Toronto Venture Exchange, I dare you to find me one that doesn't have a 52-week high or low of a double. So you buy low, you sell half when it doubles. You preserve your capital, you take that capital and go and do it again. And that's part of our investing and trading philosophy and methodology.
It definitely sounds like a good plan in my book. And what do you think about gold itself as an investment right now?
Well, and I noticed that Bullion Vault is a big clearinghouse or sells lots of bullion, and I'm one of these people that have a significant amount of my net assets, a minimum of 10% of all time in physical gold in my physical possession. So I view gold not as an investment or a speculation. I view gold as my insurance policy against financial calamity, my hedge against collapse, and with the idea that gold is money and nothing else is.
Right, and because it's the one exchange of value that can't be manipulated by government entities. That's what I consider.
True enough, yes. I mean, there's a finite supply of gold in the world. We mine something on the order of 85 tons of gold a year, 80 to 85 tons, and that's not much gold. So the inflation of the gold supply is very minimal, and we see that. I mean, I'll give you a little example. In 1950, how many barrels of oil did an ounce of gold buy? I'll tell you, gold was $35 an ounce, oil was $3, so about $12. Today, gold is $12.80, oil's about, WTI's about $102. It's about 12 and a half barrels of oil. So that tells you right there that gold retains its purchasing power.
Right, and also that it's at the proper level.
Exactly. And sometimes it goes higher than that level, and sometimes it goes lower than that level.
Right.
But if
so,
you draw a curve, it's going to smooth itself out over a period of time.
That's right. And there were buying opportunities in the early part of this century, that's for sure.
Well, and there was buying opportunities this summer too. So I bought gold this summer. I buy gold almost every summer because if you look at a gold chart, year after year, it's going to hit a low sometime between say the middle of June and the first of September, and seasonal low of gold. So I went in and bought a bunch of gold and. Geez, I think I'm trying to remember when it was. Sometime in the summer. I didn't buy exactly at the low, so right now at 1280, if you're looking to buy gold, it's down from 1400 two or three weeks ago. So I don't know.
It's not a bad buy. But before I let you go, just really quick, how did you get into this business, and what's the most exciting event that happened to you?
Yeah, well, I got into the business because I wanted to work outside. I went to college as a petroleum engineer and decided I didn't want to sit behind a desk with a calculator or work on a offshore rig in the North Sea. I became a geologist, got jobs in the mining business, and I've just gone from there. And it's my love, and you know, I'll do it. Knock on wood, till the day I die. I don't see retiring because I love what I do. It gives me an excuse to get outside and work and evaluate. And then, of course, we're here to make money. So we've done quite successfully in the newsletter.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm sorry for the computer glitch earlier. But it's been a great show, and I hope to have you on again at another time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Miguel. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Mickey. Take care. Well, everyone, that was Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. Wonderful conversation we had, and I hope you're able to tune again next time. Thank you, and take care.
Nothing you heard here on New York Markets Live is meant to influence or guide your investment decisions in any way. I nor our guests take any responsibility for any decisions you may make based on what you have heard on this show. We advise that you seek professional help on your investment decisions. I would like to thank my wife Debbie, my friend and editor Adrian Ash, and all at Influence Central for their support. We hope you enjoyed the show and hope you tune in next time. This has been a production of BullionVault.com, the world's largest gold and silver exchange for physical bullion.